I'm Karina Naber, and this is the AV Experience, a podcast brought to you by Optima. On today's episode, we'll be speaking to one of the most prominent figures within the AV industry, John Sidwick. John currently leads CollabTech Group, a leading provider of collaboration services, in addition to sitting on the board at Avixa as chairman. I hope you enjoy the episode. So, John, it's safe to say you've had a pretty incredible career. Could you just give us a rundown of the events that took you from head of LCD sales at Sharp Electronics to president at CollabTech, and what drew you into the world of AV?
Oh, that's a long one. That's a long one. Have you got all day? Shall we start what got me into AV, and I'll kind of get you to CollabTech? The simple reason I got into AV, there are two reasons. One is that I needed a job. I kind of managed to fall into getting a motorbike and an apartment and realized that unwisely, I hadn't thought I had to pay for them. So I thought, I do need a job. And the second reason is that I loved hi-fi systems. So as a kid, I played around with audio. I loved collecting hi-fi, building different systems, doing different configurations. So if you looked at where my passion was, it was kind of evolved around something to do with audio. And so I walked into a hi-fi shop and got a job. I was meant to go to university, and my parents weren't happy that I didn't do that, but I thought the idea of a motorbike and apartment was going to be more fun. I quickly realized that the industry is just a great industry. I enjoyed talking to people, working with people, and really helping people buy solutions that made their world better, you know, whether it be a hi-fi system, specifying that, and then more into the video side as well with TV. So very much consumer. Kind of then fell into Sharp Electronics because I wanted to get involved in a manufacturer after 5 years being in retail. And that kind of took me into the consumer side, which is as a vendor. But what it really took me into the next step, into Pro AV, and there I really landed into something I loved. And that was when projectors were bigger than my desk, and we were still using LED panels or LCD panels to put on. And you'll be nodding as if you know what I'm talking about, but you won't. LCD panels that used to sit on an overhead projector and used to put an acetate on that on the panel so that you could put the display, instead of an acetate on the OHP, you put a computer signal through the panel and using an overhead projector project some very simple graphics. Basically, that was the start of the AV industry. And effectively, we took that panel, we kind of flipped it on its side, you threw a light source through it, and that became a projector. And that was just the early days. And it's so exciting to be in the embryonic early days of an industry. I spent 11 years at Sharp, ran the AV division, the Pro AV division for 6-7 years of that, then moved into Maverick. And that was most probably my home for 26 years. Dealt with a lot of different vendors, great customers, and just really got involved in the industry. Started working with Infocom at the time, Avixa now, and that's kind of another story of my career. And actually started working with Optoma. So I had some great times with Optoma. I remember right at the beginning, getting involved in selling your projectors and kind of think that was 20 plus years ago, which is a scary thought. And I think it was 2012, we moved the Maverick business into Tech Data and really started to grow and be a global company. This is like a long story, but I'm very old, so it's a very long story. So I apologize about this. But there's a couple of important points. One is that we kind of realized that the AV business was going to grow beyond recognition. So it became a UC AV business. So this whole unified collaboration and getting involved in the meeting room environment from more of a platform-based conversation really was an important kind of inflection point for me in the industry and for the industry itself. And anyway, after 26 years at working with Maverick, I felt that I wanted to make a change. And I don't like big companies, to be honest. And I like working with big companies, but working in a big company is quite restrictive. And Maverick got to be a big company. We ended up being an $800 million business globally. And I wanted to spend a few years working in back into a smaller, more agile environment. So ultimately, that's why I landed in CollabTech Group. We're a global service-based company, but I run it, and then I've got the ability, the autonomy and the agility to kind of form a business that will be really exciting for the future.
What would you say has been the key to your success in the industry?
Oh, that's easy. Great people. just surround yourself with really good people. Yeah, I love working in teams. I've been privileged to work with some amazing people in the past, and you know, people I've had working with me for many years. I have one person that's worked with me for 26 years on and off, and she's with me now at Collabtech. And you form a great partnership with these people, and you know, they make you great. And I couldn't have done anything that I've done without having good people around me. And I think it's always one of the things I always say is recognize where your weaknesses are and make sure that you get people to fill those. And I have a ton of weaknesses. I have plenty of those. So I have to have quite a few people around me, but they're all good. So it's definitely people.
Have you ever received pushback on your ideas? How do you combat this to make people see your vision?
I'm terrible at that. I get really annoyed. Yes is the answer. I've been lucky enough to have a reasonable track record that if people do push back, and I had this at a couple of the bigger companies that I've worked with, that you just have to make sure that you, A, don't give up. I have a number of mantras. B, never give up. If you think it's right, keep on going. B, don't be afraid to fail, because you will fail, but don't be afraid to fail. And don't judge yourself for failing. You know, often failure is seen as a negative. I just think it's just a sign of actually trying really, really hard. And sometimes you try maybe a little bit too hard. And some of the failures I think I've been involved in the past, actually, if I tried them a bit later, would have been just right. So timing is often something to look at. But I think if you're with bigger companies, if you're getting pushback, you just have to make sure that you present coherently and in the language people expect to listen to and want to understand why you want to do something. So go back, try again, represent. Ultimately, if you keep on getting enough pushback, leave. I mean, that's stop doing it. Now you try somewhere else. And I've certainly had that a couple of times in my career where I thought, I'm having to fight too many battles to get to the next stage, and maybe time for a change.
And what would you say has been your proudest moment during your time?
I love seeing the companies I've been involved with developing, particularly Maverick. I mean, Maverick's my kind of 26-year-old baby, and I'll never forget that. And I still now and again use the word Maverick instead of Collabtech by mistake. So certainly, seeing companies develop into something that really I wouldn't have anticipated before. But actually thinking about it, the proudest moments I get is bumping into people that used to work in Maverick as, you know, joined as young kids. I mean, I recently bumped into somebody. She was a lady joined me as a 19-year-old at Maverick as a salesperson. And she developed within the company, then left. I met her recently. And she's now the marketing director for a very large IT distributor. And that kind of gives me goosebumps. Think that person, and they will always remember their first Maverick years. Those people, you know, it was a very formative time for them. So, kind of being part of their journey, I feel really proud, and I feel kind of like it's like one of my kids. So look at that, I'm getting old now. And so look, somebody like say, look at my kid is now the marketing director of this particular distributor. And there's many examples of that where people have kind of come through the Maverick ranks and ended up in an amazing role. So that really makes me proud.
Do you think you're ever going to slow down and take a break?
No. It's a great industry. I mean, God, I don't play golf, much to the annoyance of quite a few of the vendors that I dealt with in the past who wanted me to play golf because they wanted to play golf. I'm not kind of, yeah, my work is my hobby. I'm involved in a couple of businesses. I enjoy mentoring people in business. But Collabtech's now a great... To me, I feel like I did in Maverick 26 years ago. All I see in front of me is opportunity. I don't know quite what our opportunity is. I don't know quite what direction it's going to take us in. But you just got a feeling that, you know, we're in the right place at the right time, and just riding the wave of quick one. It's a quick one. Sorry, I'm going to ramble again, but. It's all about catching the right waves. You know, business has been in the right place at the right time and really running hard on the right waves. And now and again, you'll sit on the wave and it'll be the wrong wave. I learned this a while ago, and it kind of, this is the Maverick piece, is that if you think of a surfer spends a lot of time looking for the right wave, and they paddle out, they put a lot of energy to paddle out, they sit there waiting for the right wave to come. And when they find that right wave, they get up and they ride it hard, and they travel miles and have an amazing period. I learned a while ago that the perfect wave the perfect wave that a surfer wants to find is actually called the Maverick wave. So I believe that the Maverick found a lot of great, we did really find a lot of great waves. We did find a few bad ones that did crush us, but we found more good ones than bad ones. And I just feel like there's a whole bunch of great waves coming on behind us at the moment for the Club Tech business model to ride over the next few years. And that means I'm not going to slow down because I don't want to miss that. I want to be part of that.
What are the hot topics in AV and technology for 2021 going into 2022?
It's an interesting one. I think AV is such a broad term for a start. I mean, as I said, as chairman of AVIXA, which is, you know, one of my privileged roles to have this year, you know, you look at AV. AV runs from everything from an event, you know, so it could be on stage with a rock band is an AV experience, all the way through to a simple meeting room and anything that sits between. But AV means so much more now to the world. If you think of telemedicine, teleeducation, if you look at AR and VR, getting into how people be able to look at maintaining and looking at things like factories, processes, growing farm crops, building dams, looking at electric lines. You know, there's so many things now that rely on AV. And I think the biggest change that I would have said that we've seen is that we used to be like mission optional. It was great to have a bit of AV somewhere. It was great to have it in a meeting room. It was great to have it in a museum. It was great to have it in a retail outlet. It was really good to have it in a classroom, but it was always optional. Now we've shifted totally to mission critical. Yeah, you know, there is no option. You have to have to offer a real experience, to be able to people to work correctly. You have to offer AV as a standard, as much as you would expect to get a Wi-Fi signal. You expect to be able to have a TV or sort of video and an audio signal. And we are in the communication business. And we kind of think of ourselves as offering this technical solution, but actually it's all about talking to people and communicating in different ways. And there's never been a more important time in the world ever than the last 16 months of having great ability to communicate really well. And that's quite, I mean, it's a very responsible role we have as an industry, but also an incredibly exciting one.
How have you seen the industry evolve and where do you see it going?
Whoa, big one. Well, when I first started, remember those big projectors and then the LED panels, LCD panels? You know, we were, nobody would have envisaged where we are now. And I think it was a very niche market with high levels of touch and high level of expertise. And I think it wasn't long before the world said, well, eventually AV will be just an IT product. It'll be kind of ubiquitous. It'll be deployed everywhere. And where will the value be? Well, what's happened is it's actually gone both directions. You know, with now UCB, that's a whole new connectivity device, USB connected devices that are deployed in volume, very simply. A lot of those still need specification and still need AV touch, but it's not 100% required that you have a true AV professional touch those products. But we're now seeing, and this is great for Optoma and your amazing range of projectors, we're now seeing actually those conferencing collaboration solutions thinking, look, we need to have bigger canvases to use. And if you look at what Microsoft Teams are now looking at, their evolution, projectors will be coming back into those environments. And that's not a simple deployment. We all know that you can't put two or three pixel map projectors on the ceiling and get those to work in a UC comms environment easily. So I do see the volume side continuing to grow, but I also see value being added to that more so. On the other side, as we said earlier, if you think experiential environments are going to be so important. Yeah, look at the dot-com boom moving to online shopping means that, I mean, I just ordered a pack of AAA batteries literally 10 minutes ago on Amazon, and they'll be at my doorstep in either today or tomorrow. And I live in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, that our reflex now is to buy things simply. So how do you get people back into the retail environment? Well, you offer them an experience, and that's where the true AV businesses are so good. It's offering incredible experiences using great products like Optoma projectors. You know, that's absolutely going to be a growth area. So, you know, I think the sound of the death knell of the AV industry has been said many times in the past, but I don't think it's been ever more an exciting or more important time for the pro AV industry.
How can AV companies stay relevant?
Just keep on doing, producing great AV. I mean, we all love great AV. And I think I've had a lot of conversations about this recently where we've all become used to, I mean, my home setup a year and a half ago used to be a Logitech meetup. It's just a standard desk, one monitor, plug my PC in. Now I've got Microsoft Surface Hub, I've got a Shure microphone, I've got a couple of monitors. I've got a load of stuff around here. I've made my home into kind of like almost studio quality home for just collaboration. As you go back into the office, that means I expect to be that or better in the office. So as an industry, we've got the opportunity really to offer a far higher level of experience, because that's what the expectation will be. But we talked again about things like events, museums, retail, you know, the opportunity for us as an industry to be relevant in so many areas. Interestingly enough, and we're dealing at the moment in helping globally roll out a major hotels chains, proof of concept on their meeting rooms of the future. And we're working together with a couple of key vendors in the space to do that. And the level of AV they're going to put in their meeting spaces is beyond anything you would have expected a year or so ago, because they know that experience they offer has got to be superb. So you think about that from an AV industry, everywhere, everybody's going to be doing that, whether it's hotel meeting spaces, or as we said before, it's retail or education. Things, yeah, tele-education is not going to go away. Telemedicine's not going to go away. So I think there is no problem at all in maintaining a great deal of relevance in this industry.
And how has life been at Collabtech over the past few months? Operations returning back to normal? Did it ever really slow down?
Oh, it completely changed. I kind of accepted the job or worked with the owner to take over the business back in February last year. I was actually in San Francisco just as a boat was coming in, which was the cruise liner, which had a lot of COVID cases coming into San Francisco. And I think that was the point. We were still thinking COVID was this kind of weird blip on the horizon with just an ISE with 55,000 people. By the time I started and kind of escaped from the Maverick Tech Data environment was early summer. And in between, obviously, the world changed beyond recognition. You know, we obviously saw we now know what had happened, but we wouldn't have envisaged that at the time. Collabtech was largely a physical delivery service. So we support customers in deploying their unified comm solution set, particularly around platform, a lot of it Teams-based. And most of our work with our collaboration specialists was actually done physically on site. So you can imagine we had to pivot completely, and we changed that to 90% virtual. We're now seeing that get back to more 50-50, but the good news is we've kept that virtual engagement and not flipped back to fully physical. So we have this now mix between physical and virtual. I don't know what normal is. I really don't know what normal is. We are getting back to some sense of kind of stability in terms of getting through and looking at what the next kind of evolution of the market will be. But I don't think anybody is really prepared for the wave the market is going to throw at us over the next year or so. We're going to see so much change, dramatic change, that I think anybody who thinks they're kind of the point that we are now is kind of just is where it's going to be in a year or so's time is fooling themselves. It's a mess. It's an exciting time, but it's going to be really challenging for people as well.
How is the future looking for Collabtech now, if you could sum it up in one word?
One word is the word we're kind of using a lot around the business at the moment is, and there's a profanity in the middle, which I won't tell you, is opportunity. And that's kind of great, but it's also a challenge. I've just literally speaking to one of my colleagues a minute ago, just before this call, and we've just in the middle of another opportunity conversation. It's one of these situations where you want to win it because it's a fantastic opportunity. Be thinking, how am I going to deal with this? And it's not just organic growth opportunity. It's not just scaling what we have. It's finding new opportunities. Since I took over, we've split the business into three divisions. And by the way, division sounds like it's a big, very formal company. It's not. It's just three go-to-market strategies. We've kept the core business, which works for anything from deploying product on a white glove service all the way through to integration and installation to training and virtual support, which we do with our collaboration specialists, mainly field-based. We've also started CloudTech Studios. CloudTech Studios creates digital content to help the market move. And we talk this role is communicating collaboration. It's wherever you need great production values, but all associated with our collaboration expertise. And we're doing a lot of work with major multinationals on behalf of the channel, creating deployment training programs. We are doing webinars, we're doing market development programs. So that's really exciting. But we've also started contract. Now, contract is a really interesting business. It's providing volume support for the channel and for vendors on deployment, adoption, and maintenance of a unified comms solution. And that's really finding a lot of opportunity. Because it's not, people say it's a call center role. What it is, but actually what we call it is a brand loyalty business. That business is about creating brand loyalty for vendors. So the best way to have brand loyalty is for customers to use the product and love using the product. And our service set added to product really enables that to happen. We're also about what we call shift left. It's shifting the conversation and the problems so far left, they actually disappear by helping vendors and the channel support customers in a way that actually by the time that where the problem would normally hit, we've actually already solved it. And those two things are really resonating well with the channel. Can you imagine the growth of unified comms solutions is already phenomenal, but it's going to grow beyond a recognition. So we need to make sure customers enjoy using products. And that's where we intersect ourselves in terms of the sales cycle and the service cycle.
Following your poll results for the return of trade events on LinkedIn, what are your event plans after the summer?
It was interesting poll results where it's kind of like split around people. You know, more people than I thought were a little bit cautious about wanting to get back into going to events. And most people felt by the autumn it would be fine. So I had the privilege of going to ISE in Barcelona last week. It was amazing to see real people have real conversations and have real drinks and actually find some real opportunities, which just goes to prove nothing, as much as we can sit on a Teams call or a Zoom call or a Google call, nothing beats actually being with people. And I don't know if you've recently seen, there's a Microsoft survey that went out that said one thing that we have seen is obviously a massive uptick in our video communication. However, we've also seen a massive contraction in the number of people we speak to, because we tend to speak to people that we know and you're having to work with. You don't have those ad hoc meetings that you get in other environments, like being in the office, bumping into somebody at the coffee machine that you haven't spoken to for a while. And actually, what we've really noticed is we've missed those ad hoc meetings, not because of the casual chat, but actually they do produce things. And ISE was a great example of that. I bumped into three or four people I haven't seen for a while and had conversations that then sparked off an action. So being at ISE in Barcelona was fantastic. And I can't wait for the London event as well, which will either be pre or post when this goes out. I have no idea. But the London event at the end of June. For me, the next event is going to be Infocom. And that's the big one in October. And that is going to be enormous, because by then, the majority, everybody that wants to be vaccinated, that will want to go from the US and the majority of Europe will be vaccinated. So I think the level of people's appetite and enthusiasm, excitement to get back together will be around Infocom. And then I think we'll start seeing us roll into the normal cadence. There's Enterprise Connect also in October and also in Florida. And then we move into, obviously, from a European perspective, what we're all waiting for is the kind of the real big, true Barcelona ISE in February. We don't hold our own events. We just kind of shamelessly use other people's events to meet people.
Any exciting news in the pipeline for CollabTech or any other projects you're involved with?
It's just exciting to be part of the business. I think from what I just said, I think taking the view of the business split into three is really exciting. Making sure that we're incredibly good at the core business that we deliver, but already the studio business is taking us to areas that I never thought we would be involved in. So we're involved in some really exciting projects in terms of creating digital content. But the contract business is one where I'm really excited, not because it's kind of glitzy and dazzling, a bit like the studio one, which it is, but it's just, you think, wow, we can actually make a difference to people's lives of how they deploy and use products. And that's exciting to be in those conversations. You know, being a brand loyalty business is not, in the weirdest way, is really interesting. And it's, and we're offering something that's completely unique in the market. And I think we've got something quite special there.
And how can people get in touch with you and find out more about anything that you're up to?
LinkedIn, just drop me a line on LinkedIn. I'm really good at responding to that. I hate people who don't respond to me, so I make sure I do respond to people. Or go onto the Collabtech website. You'll find me there. Or the Avixa website, by the way, as well. Sorry, the Avixa one as well.
Could you tell me about Avixa as well?
Yeah, I did actually. Just as I said that, I think it's really important for us to recognise that. I mean, Avixa has done an amazing job of being the kind of the association that the whole industry relates to. I say relates to, I would say knows, but we're actually now seeing a period of time when I think having an incredibly strong association is really important to the industry going forward. Well known for the trade show events. So, and I love the fact that if you look at Infocom, the Infocom brand is now global and it's seen in so many different parts of the world. And part of my role has been on the board, as I've been privileged to see school children in Colombia and Brazil being given tours around Infocom in those areas at the trade show floor. And their eyes wide open and people wanting to get involved in the industry. And going back to your first question, and this is where kind of I think is a neat circle. How did I get involved in AV? Well, I kind of fell into it accidentally. I talked to you before we started. You fell into AV accidentally. I don't know anybody who kind of went to school and went, I want to be in AV. Now, you may have been wanting to be a kind of a roadie in a rock, which kind of was or part of a slice of the AV industry, but you didn't see it as an industry. As an association, I think we've got the opportunity to actually create more of an industry feel around AV, wherever you may want to land in it, and hopefully start influencing the youth of today and saying, actually, I want to be involved in those with those cool AV guys. They do amazing stuff. And I think from an Avixa point of view, we've got some great plans to really start, you know, improving our outreach, improving the education side, and pushing that message through not only the industry, but through other routes into those people that one day will be the people running Optoma and Collabtech of this world.
Thank you, John, for sharing your AV experience with us.
You're welcome. Great to talk to you.
You've been listening to the AV Experience, brought to you by Optoma. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast or would even like to feature, please visit optoma.com for more details. I'm Karina. This is the AV Experience. Catch you in the ether.